Hi and welcome to What's Next. We're at the second day of the Future Web Apps conference in London, and I have a very special guest today, which is Brett Taylor, one of the founders of FriendFeed. Hi, Brett.
Hi, nice to meet you.
FriendFeed is like a social aggregator, and I guess you have some users in Sweden, but if you don't know exactly what it is, could you just describe it quickly?
Sure. FriendFeed shows you all the things that people you know have found on the web recently. So when you log on to FriendFeed, you'll see all the YouTube videos, web pages, and music that people in your social network have shared recently. We do this by aggregating over 43 different websites like Google Reader or Last.fm or
Twitter.
And we'll aggregate all of your friends' activities on all of those sites and show you sort of a feed of everything that your friends have been up to.
And you launched February this year,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we launched February of this year.
And announced at the same time you had $5 million in funding.
That's correct.
It's a very good start.
Yeah, no, it was a very good start. We had been doing private beta testing for a handful of months, and we're confident about the product's, you know, appeal. And then I'm glad we raised money when we did. It seems that things have changed in the past couple of weeks. So we have enough money that I think we'll have plenty of time to, you know, figure out our business model, even despite the economic climate.
You used to work at Google, and which is like a dream employer for like 99% of everyone who attends this conference anyway.
Yeah.
So I want to know, what kind of problems did you see? What inspired you to start something like FriendFeed?
Yeah, that's a good question. I actually didn't see too many problems with Google. It's just a larger company now. When I started at Google, I think there was about 400 or so full-time employees, and about over half of those were engineers. And so as a consequence, I knew every engineer at Google well. And we were in one building in Mountain View. And then when I left, it was 12,000 or 15,000 employees spread across lots of buildings and lots of countries. And as a consequence, there was a lot of opportunity there, but it also didn't feel quite as entrepreneurial as it once did. And I've always sort of had that bug. I like the thrill and the creativity of creating something new without the tax that you inherently have when you're part of such a large organization with lots of priorities and existing commitments and existing strategic issues and things like that.
And when it comes to using the web every day on an everyday basis, what problems did you see there that made you kind of come up with the idea? Or you're not the only founder, but what made you come up with the idea for FriendFeed?
Yeah, so FriendFeed, Google was always focused on search, and Google's growth has really been driven by the growth of the web. So as people use the web more, that information becomes more and more important, and search becomes more important. Well, the trend that we've been seeing with the growth of user-generated content, particularly in the past 5 years or so, is that search is important, but what's equally important is discovery. You know, you don't search for the videos you want to watch. People say, hey, this video is funny, you should watch it. And so that act of discovery, there'd been a lot of work in helping users create content. I mean, most notably things like YouTube and blogging. But there has been much less successful product development on the side of helping you sift through all of that. And so, you know, there's billions of YouTube videos watched every single day. Like, how do you find the one or two that might be interesting to you? There's the go to the YouTube front page and see the handful they chose to put there, but that's a very small percentage of the whole, and there might be something really compelling that you missed. And our theory was that, like, social networks were really a great filter for this. And so we created what could be called a social network, but it's sort of flipped on its head because it's completely focused on the content as opposed to the people. We don't even have like profiles for users. It's just all content, and it's just shared by people that you know. And so essentially the idea is that you use your friends as a filter for all of that user-generated content. It's sort of like, I guess, the, you know, television guide for new media.
Because that was the big discussion was, or is still, that as we are drowned in information, our friends are perhaps the best people to help us like filter that information. But now something interesting is happening as well. You were addressing that in your speech earlier. When all of my friends and all of your friends are online and they start drowning us in links, it becomes, after a while, unbearable. You actually have to filter it within the filter. And you're working on that right now. What are you working on?
Yeah, so it's something that we, you know, just started working on, and I was excited to show some of the stats in my speech. But essentially, the big piece of feedback we've gotten from users is there's a lot of great information here, but there's a lot. And, you know, and there's people who refresh their friend feed homepage 1,000 times a day, and, you know, those are great users, but not everybody is, you know, going to have the time or the willingness to do that. And so it's a really challenging problem, though, because most algorithms for, you know, filtering useful things don't capture the essence of the content in a network like friend feed. I brought up some examples in my speech. For example, like, just because when your friend publishes a photo album, it's not going to be deemed important by traditional algorithms because only one person shared that photo album. So it's not very important to very many people. But that's the definition of personal content, right? That photo album is theirs, so of course it's not going to be shared by more people than them. But it might be very important to you because that person is very important to you. And so there's a number of factors that are both social and focused on the content that need to be taken into account to create something that filters effectively. And so that's really what we've been focusing on, is working out what the right signals are to look at to filter this content in a way where you don't miss the things that you care about. And in particular, if you have maybe, you know, your older sister or your mom is not an active sharer, but when they do share, you don't want to miss that one, you know, that one photo that they published, because even though you don't want to let them be drowned out by your colleagues who might read tons of news online, you know. And so there's a lot of variables that are somewhat unique to the social environment that we've created on FriendFeed, and very similar to social networks like Twitter and others that we need to preserve. So it's a challenge, but I think I'm pretty excited looking at the data that I think there's a lot of potential there.
Yeah, you showed some quite funny data on your cousin and what mattered to him. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I was just pulling out an example that I thought would be, you know, people could identify with. And so I was looking at my cousin and all the people he was subscribed to, and it turned out that, you know, when his sister Emily shares anything, he's very likely to find it interesting according to our metrics. He's also subscribed to Robert Scoble, who's a prominent blogger, and, you know, he's very unlikely to like something that Robert Scoble publishes. And not because Robert Scoble's not interesting, but I think his volume is so high that the odds of any individual thing being interesting to Ross are fairly low. But then when you look at the data in greater depth, if you look at the likelihood that Ross will like one of Robert Scoble's entries when his sister Emily also likes it, it goes from, you know, 0% to 50%. And so it turns out that the social data is possibly more important or more useful in this environment than the content itself, because you share the interests of the people you know. And it turns out that whether or not you know it, you and, you know, your best friend may share, you know, the same taste in videos, and you and, you know, your coworker may share the same taste in news. And I think the challenge is sort of building something that in an automated way can infer that, so that, you know, you can really leverage the power of your social network to find the best things for you without getting that fire hose that I think a lot of people experience on sites like FriendFeed and Twitter.
But have you already managed to apply this, like using social data as well?
We have. So on FriendFeed today, in the top right hand of any screen, there's links for the best of day, best of week, and best of month. And those use some of this data to try to find the best 30 entries from today or this week or this month. It uses a handful of those signals that I was talking about, mainly social signals. And that's really sort of was our first experiment in this area. And it's experiment quality right now. I don't think it works well for, you know, every user. It works very well for some users, though. It's kind of a neat feature, though. We have another feature on FriendFeed called Friendlist that let you group your friends, you know, into groups. You can separate your coworkers from your family. And you can get different best of pages for each of those friend lists. You can find the entries that were best as determined by your family members and best as determined by your coworkers or the technology industry. So it is a really useful tool. I think as we experiment and we come up with something that we think is high quality for everybody all the time, we may make it sort of a more primary interface to FriendFeed as opposed to relegating it to links on the side of the page. But really that will come down to quality and finding the right user experience.
You're going to launch some interesting stuff next week.
Yeah.
What's happening then?
So I'm going to be purposely vague because just to leave a little excitement for the launch. But we're launching some features that are more real time. So you'll see your friend feed stream in more in real time. Right now in the U.S. there's elections going on. So during every election debate, there's people are on friend feed posting messages many times a second. And so we're launching some features to make that experience work really well. But you'll just have to wait till next week to see
it. Okay, but then what's the difference then from, for example, Twitter and other real-time feeds?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of overlap for some cases, like discussing, you know, the election. I certainly think there's probably some overlap. The thing about FriendFeed, though, is it is really focused on content as opposed to communication. I think most people use Twitter sort of like they use instant messaging. It's obviously different because it's a little more public and more permanent, but it is the communication style is quite similar. With FriendFeed, the focus is typically a link, and the discussions tend to be around a particular piece of content. So someone will post a video on FriendFeed, and the comments are about that video as opposed to being sort of stateless instant messaging comments. And so I think people tend to use them in conjunction and tend to use Twitter for more communications tools and FriendFeed more for link sharing. I think that will continue to be the case, and particularly as we add more content filtering tools, I think the products become more and more distinctive as Twitter adds more and more communications tools.
But isn't it a risk also that it gets too complicated to filter? It's like if you add all these tools, you can adjust.
I think that's the key. I don't think configuration is really going to be the answer, except for the most devoted users. And so we need to make it so this is automatic, so that whether or not you put any effort into it, you get a nice experience. And that's really the challenge for us. I think the things we have right now, like friend lists, are useful, but they do require a little effort on your part. And I think that, yeah, we realized that and we put those features out there because our users were asking for them. But I think if we really want to make this product widely adopted, we do need to make that experience a little more automatic so that you don't need to put any effort in to get high quality out.
Something that hit me when I was listening to your speech earlier was that, and also something that Ben Hurst said from ICANN as Cheeseburger, people love to see facts about themselves.
Yeah.
And I think something that I would find interesting is to see statistically who is influential when it comes to what I like.
Yeah.
So there's
actually a page right now on FriendFeed where you can see stats on who finds you most interesting and who you find most interesting, actually. So if you click on the friends link on the top part of FriendFeed, you'll see a stats tab, and the stats will show you bar graph of all the people that you found most interesting lately and the people who found you most interesting. And also, it'll tell you what services that you use most frequently and things like that. So,
is that popular to look at?
It's moderately popular. I think it has a novelty effect. I think everyone goes there once or twice. I don't think people are going there all the time. But I also don't think we promote it very much. It's definitely something that I think if we promoted more, people would get a kick out of.
Yeah. I ran into a blogger friend of mine from Sweden just as I was telling him that I'm going to interview you, and he texted me a question.
Good.
And I take absolutely no responsibility for this question. It's his opinion. But he says, why is FriendFeed ugly? Do you mean it to be like that? Or are you going to do something about it? Or are you counting on the three part is going to do the work via their API? Bad translation, right?
I personally don't find it unattractive. I do think that we are focused on usability more than aesthetic design at our company. And I think that is something that people do want to, like, you know, use FriendFeed as a method of self-expression. And I think that on one end of the spectrum of self-expression is something like MySpace, where every page is, you know, neon colors and plays music. And then on the other end are sites perhaps like, you know, FriendFeed or even Facebook that are a little more locked down. So I think we've been discussing ways to make it possible for people to customize, you know, the look and feel of their pages a little more within reason. I do think that we, you know, really focused on usability primarily, though. I remember when I worked at Google that graphic designers all over despised the Google logo because it looked kind of cartoonish with its rainbow colors. And I think it all comes down to taste at some point. I think that logo has grown, you know, has inspired fond feelings in the hearts and minds of lots of people, despite the graphic designers not liking it. So
that's an answer for him. You're also going to make it easier to integrate FriendFeed with other sites. How crucial is that for you?
The short answer is I'm not really sure. It's something that some publishers are very interested in. So we've launched some APIs to make it easier, for example, to show here's all the people who have shared this blog post on FriendFeed, and you can integrate the comments from FriendFeed into your blog comments and things like that. I think that, you know, because friend feed is about content, we are interested in making it easier to have friend feed coexist with the content, so you can see some of that contextual information around the content itself. But it's unclear to me how widely adopted it will be. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of people developing these types of widgets and whatnot for blogs. So I think that there's a lot of screen real estate competition, and I think it's pretty valuable, but only time will tell.
Thank you very much, Brett Taylor, one of the founders from FriendFeed, for joining us at What's Next. If you want to check out who else is listening, you can join our group at Facebook. My name is Christine Hainona. Thanks for listening. Bye.